This is a special edition of Dale Carter's America. We have a very special guest with us in the studio today that we will get to. Today we're going to talk about police work and where policing is these days and the Police Academy, the Citizens Police Academy. You're seeing that I'm wearing the Citizens Police Academy shirt. It's because I'm a graduate. And we're going to talk about all that with Officer Doug Heisman from Blue Springs, Missouri. We'll do that next on Dale Carter's America.
From the heart of flyover country, he's not on the far right, and he's certainly not on the far left. Like you, he's somewhere in the middle. This is Dale Carter's America.
We're here in the podcast studio in the awesome Steel City building in Westport, and Doug Heisman is our guest today on Dale Carter's America. Doug, thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Doug and I worked together for a long time in Blue Springs when I was on the city council there, and I'm a graduate. We were trying to figure out which class I graduated in. We think it was 12,
Ten or 12, something like that.
And now you're on class number 39.
Yes, 39.
It's incredible.
It's awesome.
You've got, what you do is you put people, citizens, regular folks in the town through a class, which we're going to go through kind of point by point, and then they get a better understanding of what police work is all about, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's talk about policing. Before we get into the syllabus and all this, and I don't want to put you on the spot, and I'm just talking in general terms because you've been an officer for a long time.
Yes.
What's your background?
I've been in 25 years, started out with Jackson County Sheriff's Department. I've worked in the schools, worked narcotics, worked patrol.
Yeah.
Now I'm the crime prevention officer in Blue Springs.
Yeah. And Blue Springs is a great town.
Absolutely.
And you know, I know you would probably agree that the council there, I haven't been on the council for a while, but they support the police there.
Yes.
We got the public safety sales tax put through to get the radio system upgraded and get a lot of the things that you need to enforce laws. And I think you've got a pretty good council that has your back.
Absolutely. Yes, we do.
Yeah. And good structure. Bob Munns is the police chief there.
Yes, I know Chief Munns for a long time, actually. It's from Oak Grove.
So yeah.
He's a good guy.
But there are places where policing is not as respected.
Sure.
And I think Kansas City is one of those. I mean, you said you worked in Jackson County, too. There's a lot of stuff going on there, too.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
So what's the feel right now, Doug, as, you know, we look at policing now, you look at it through the lens that defund the police and things like that. I mean, we had on our podcast recently, we talked about how in California they want to take canines away because canines are racist. And then you've got bad behavior by cops in some cases and by citizens against cops in other cases. It's a tough time to be a police officer.
It is a tough time. It's I've been in 25 years and it's really changed since I started. So
yeah. My stepfather was a policeman in Indiana. You know that. I grew up in a cop household. And one of the things that blew my mind when we started talking about the Citizens Police Academy was that I thought I knew a lot about what you guys go through. And then I went through this course and I came out of it thinking, I didn't know what he went through, right? He just did the job and he came home and I thought I knew a little bit about what he did, but in fact, I didn't.
Yeah, it sounds like he's, I don't remember what years he was a part of it, but it's different generation.
Yeah.
Probably didn't come home and talk about it a lot, I'm guessing. Just did his job and did a good job.
He worked until, I think he went on the job in 1971, 72, and off in the 90s, you know. So he's been retired for quite a while.
Sure. And I think a lot of things changed probably in the 90s, late 90s, 2000, seems to me. I started in about 97.
Yeah.
And I think that probably in 2 or 3 years after I started, it really started changing some of the different things.
Most recently, as we're recording this today, it's going to air down the road here, but as we're recording it today, we are laying to rest a Kansas City police officer and his canine. He was involved in a traffic accident, basically a teenager driving like a maniac. And the accident killed the officer, killed the canine officer, killed a pedestrian. When you talk to your friends on the force there, I mean, what's the scuttlebutt on something like that? Do you just shake your heads and go, this is the world we're living in now?
Yeah, I think so. You know, one of our goals is to get home safe. You know, that beginning of your you don't always think about it, but the beginning of your shift, you know, we always tell each other, you know, get home safe, be safe. So yeah, when it doesn't happen, that's a horrible thing. I didn't know that officer personally, but you know, we're all, I believe we're all family, and you know, it hurts yeah. when it happens, definitely. Yeah.
And then, you know, the young man who did this, and they checked his car, it wasn't his car, it was him.
Yeah.
He was driving like a maniac,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And he gets out of jail on a $30,000 bond.
Yeah.
He basically posted 10% of that, $3,000, and he's back home playing video games like his life's fine.
Yeah.
And knowing Jackson County, you work for Jackson County,
yes.
we watch it every day of things getting pled down. You know, this crime with a gun maybe gets pled down to this, and the person's back out on the street. We call it the turnstile justice. It would not shock me if this kid was able to plead down, didn't do any significant time. I mean, as a cop, when you take the bad guy off the street, you know, how does it make you feel when they're right back out on the street again because of what happens in the prosecutor's office?
It's frustrating. I mean, I know they prosecutors have a tough job. I understand that completely. A lot of, you know, we put a lot of work and effort into cases. You know, like I talked about working the drug task force. I mean, there was a case that I worked for 2 years. So you put a lot of your heart and soul into that case. And when things like that happens, it's frustrating.
Yeah. You know, what frustrates me, and we talked about this on one particular episode, I bought a new car, okay, and I got the temp tag for the car. Mm-hmm. And with a week to go on the temp tag, you know, I'm like, okay, what do I got to do? I got my stuff from the dealership. I want to make sure that I'm all legal and everything. And then I start looking around, and all these temp tags I'm looking at, mm-hmm. I have yet to find one that's not illegal. You know, and I took a picture of one in the Blue Springs Hy-Vee parking lot that expired in 2020.
Yes.
This is 2023.
Yes. Yes, it's frustrating.
What do we have to do? I mean, and then you've got Officer Vasquez in North Kansas City, right, who pulled the kid over. Am I thinking of the right thing here? Is that the right thing? Okay,
yeah.
Kurt says, yeah. And he was shot 5 times in North Kansas City.
Yes.
Because he had the temerity to pull over somebody with an expired temp tag.
Yes. Yeah, and it is frustrating, and you just never know that. From what I read on that article, the guy just didn't want to go to jail.
Yeah.
And probably in reality, he probably maybe would have sat in maybe what, one night, if that, and he decided to take the officer's life.
And Officer Vasquez, it was during the day in North Kansas City, a place where you don't think anything that will happen. And he's just doing his job. It's like, you know, your temp tag's expired. I'm going to pull you over.
Yeah.
We're going to have a conversation. And then bang, 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 bang.
Yes. And we all know that, I think, going into law enforcement, that could happen. And, you know, you hope it never does. But it's one of the realities of the job.
I mean, I'm using you so I can take out a lot of my frustrations because these are my frustrations.
Yeah.
And then when we have the President of the United States say, you know, you shouldn't shoot to kill. Maybe wing them.
Yeah.
I mean, you've gone through training, Doug, and you train other officers and all that. How does that hit you?
Well, it doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, there's no – one of the things about being an officer-involved shooting, it's a very low percentage of the officer that actually hits the subject they're firing at. It's somewhere around 30-40% that they actually hit. And so they actually – now you put that in the factor, and then the chance of trying to shoot him in the toe or leg or something, that doesn't help.
It just frustrates me because this president's frustrated me since he took over because he's never run even so much as a hot dog stand, and now he's the President of the United States. And instead of surrounding himself with experts who know what they're talking about in different fields, he just shoots off at the mouth. And when he said that, you know, going through this – Blue Springs Citizens Police Academy, I got he should go through it.
Absolutely.
He would get a great understanding of what it's like to be a police officer and what you guys face when you go out in the field.
Sure.
Yeah. And I told you that I gained an understanding of this that I didn't have before, even though I grew up in a cop household. And we've got this guy who gets on our Facebook page all the time. I'm not even going to mention him by name.
Sure.
I won't do him the courtesy. But he does live in our town, Blue Springs. And I said, on a serious note, because we fight politics all the time, mm-hmm. on a serious note, in our town, we have something very cool, the Blue Springs Citizens Police Academy. You should really go do it. It'll give you a great appreciation for what they go through. And his reply was, I've got a family member who's a police officer. I'm well aware of what they go through. And I will tell him, no, you are not.
Yeah. And he's welcome to come. I'm
Absolutely.
Not sure you're talking about.
Do you have a waiting list?
Right now we don't. We've had been in the past. Right now we're getting more people every day, but probably you know maybe a dozen or so.
Yeah.
In the past, when it was really firing on, it was we'd have close to 80 or so on the waiting list.
And Blue Springs isn't the only town that does this. There are others that do it. Is it a similar program in other cities? Do you know?
Or? I believe so. I've not gone to any other ones. From people that have gone to both, like say other agencies, they've said that we're more hands on. Because we do some classroom, which you have to do some classroom, but we try to get people up and moving and see what we do.
Yeah.
So we do a lot of things that I think that, you know, I don't know if other agencies take them to the firing range and shoot our guns. I don't know that happens, but we do that on a Saturday or Friday, whatever the schedule is. So
yeah, that was the one day I had to skip when I took the class, because when I did it, that day fell on St. Patrick's Day.
I remember that, yeah.
And I had to be in the parade that day.
I don't know if that's good or bad. That's worth it.
I do want to talk about that when we get to the firing range part of this. But for folks in Blue Springs who are catching the podcast, how can they get on the list to take one of these classes?
They can email me at DougHeishman@bluespringsgov.com. Or crimefree at blue, or I think it's at bluesprings.com. I need to check on that one, but they can email me directly.
Yeah.
And I can get them on the list.
All right. Kirk, can we do a fancy graphic on that at some point?
I'm way ahead of you.
He's way ahead of me. He's always way ahead of me. Kurt's way ahead of me. Okay. So let's talk about the class, because it's 9 weeks.
It's what we've done is when you went, it was 9 weeks. Now we've done it in 8 weeks. To take it to where it's a Thursday and then a Saturday. I mean, we'll talk about that when we get there. But yeah.
Yeah. Because I've got the syllabus in front of me for class number 39. So let's just start at the top. How many folks are in a group?
We shoot for anywhere around 20. Okay. Somewhere around. We figure that's a good number when we go to the range. That's a good number for security reasons.
So, I'll point out again, I did not go to the range. Might have been good for everybody. Who knows? So talk about what that first class is like.
So the first class is more of an introduction, not only into the Blue Springs Police Department, but law enforcement in general. We talk about kind of how law enforcement started. Deputy Chief Edwards, Stacy Edwards, comes in and does a PowerPoint, does an excellent job, comes in and talks about how law enforcement began in America, in England, then how we started in Blue Springs.
Yeah. And so everybody has a good appreciation for the history of it, and then they move forward. And the next class is crime scene investigation. Now, we all see this on television, and there will be a case, and it'll get wrapped in an hour, right?
Yes.
CSI.
Yes.
What really happens?
I talk about my history. Like when I worked in narcotics, actually, like a good drug case, if I send it out to the lab to test for methamphetamine, whatever, usually took about 6 months to get back.
You can't do that in a one-hour deal.
About 1 hour is not realistic. Yeah.
So. Yeah. So, what do they do in the class? Do they get their hands dirty and on how different things work?
So, Captain Rapp does a PowerPoint, talks about camera work, fingerprinting, multiple things. You know, crime scene, how to photograph a crime scene, when you get there, what to look for. And then when he's finished with that, he does like hands-on. We put out some cups and mugs and let him do fingerprints on that.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a good time.
Yeah. Any crimes solved during the class? Or?
Not usually, no.
Okay. Moving on to the next thing that you do. And these are different classes. And you say you're now doing a Thursday, Saturday?
So on we do what we do on the firearm training simulator, the FATS machine. We do that on that Thursday, and then that Friday, the next day, we go to the range.
Okay, so that combines a couple of different things.
Kinda,
I see that now.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about FATS training, because that's where I failed epically.
Yes.
And thank you for not bringing that, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't know if they tape all that stuff when you do it.
Some of the real good ones we tape. So.
Yeah.
you never know what will show up one day.
Stacy Edwards was running it, and he got a real kick out of it. I was on city council when that happened, and a little preview of what we're going to talk about in a minute, because we're going to show some scenarios on that. He said, "Councilman, why did you do that?"
And do you remember where you did it, where you were at when you did the firearm?
Was it community college?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So fortunately, a couple years ago, we were able to purchase our own simulator.
Okay.
So we can do it there at the police department.
Cool.
So.
So the next thing that you're going to do is dispatch. And I want to, when I was a kid, I, you know, again, my stepdad was a cop. I was kind of glued to the police radio then. And I always enjoyed listening to that. You know, we had a dispatcher then that had a really deep voice and all that. And it was really, he almost made it an art form. Yeah. But when somebody calls 911, it's probably one of the worst days of their life, right?
Sure. Absolutely.
And their adrenaline is firing and all that. And what always impresses me about our dispatchers who deal with this is they calmly deal with it.
Absolutely.
And so talk about what a dispatcher might do with a call. 911 call comes in. What's that dispatcher going to do?
So what you did come in. So what's unique with us? We were actually the first 911 program in Missouri. We actually, we started 911.
Really?
Yes. I think it was 1970s, somewhere in that.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. So they're, you know, starting off with dispatchers, they're our lifeline. They're awesome at what they do. Yeah, when someone calls in, it's like you said, it's one of the worst days of their lives. That's normally that's with who we deal with people. They when we deal with people, it's their worst day, like you said. So there a lot of them, you know, they can when they're calm, it's going to keep that person calm. So that really helps out.
With
our dispatchers are great at that. When you call in and whatever's going on, a wreck or whatever may be happening, domestic at the house, to really keep the situation calm. Because there's been times where I've gone on calls when I work in the road that the dispatcher calmed the call down before I even got there.
Yeah.
So a good dispatcher can do that, yeah.
And we have great dispatchers in Blue Springs. And, you know, one of the things that we did with the public safety sales tax was consolidate dispatching, correct? Before that, you had this agency, couldn't talk to that agency, couldn't talk to that agency, and now that's more consolidated.
Yes. So, yeah, the federal government put that out there and then didn't send us any money to pay
exactly.
for that.
We call that an unfunded mandate.
Yes, yes. So the great thing is with the public safety sales tax that you're part of, there's no sunset, so that will continue forever. So yeah, that's we can communicate right now on our radios, I can communicate with Independence, Kansas City, Kansas,
right.
Jackson County, whoever I need to talk to.
And a lot of times on a big call, a lot of those agencies are going to overlap at the same scene. And before that, you had to like get on a cell phone or something and call this guy. And that just seemed like it was going to be an accident waiting to happen.
Sure. Yeah, like when I started with, if there was a pursuit, when I was in Jackson County, you know, if it was heading to Independence, they'd get onto the phone, talk to Independence on the phone, their dispatch.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then they would relay back and forth. Well, you know, what happens with that?
Not good.
Yeah.
Not good. So that's working out very well.
Yes.
So the next session, we're going to talk about the bike patrol, the bike unit, and it says therapy canine. Is that the same thing as a canine?
No. So that's a new program for us, the therapy canine. And we're looking to get a therapy canine. This is one of the first classes that we actually did the therapy canine. The officer from Green Valley brought their dog. And what that's more of just a dog. He doesn't search for drugs. He doesn't bite. He's just a dog that would come in, like say in a setting like this, and just hang out with people. And the goal is to kind of help people if they're, like you said, the worst day of their lives.
Right, calm them down.
Calm them down. Things like that. We had a training on it a while back where an officer met a girl at a school that she's really angry, upset. And when the dog came in within a half hour, the girl was calmed down and was walking out with him to where she normally probably would have fought him.
Yeah.
So we're still working on the therapy dog. I think we're going to have that hopefully either this beginning of next year, I think.
No, we still have a canine unit, right?
But we currently don't have any canine. Our canines.
Really?
They had to retire a couple of them.
Okay.
Unfortunately, canines don't last a long time.
Right.
And I'm not an expert by any means, but usually, you know, 7, 8, 9 years.
I just know that when you do the national night out, that's usually one of the highlights of the night is when you bring out the canine demonstration.
Yeah. And I think, and I know that's one of the goals of the next couple of years is to get our canines back. Cause we had two, used to have two at one time.
Yeah.
And, so I know that's one of the goals, and it partly is with the shortage of manpower right now.
Yeah, well, and that's tough. I mean, you know, we talked about that at the top of the podcast. It's like, you know, it's tough to get people to want to be a cop right now because, you know, you look at the political landscape and it's like, man, if I do this, I'm going to be screwed. And if I do that, I'm going to be screwed.
Sure.
It ain't worth it.
Yeah.
And then you're putting your life on the line. I mean, it's a calling.
It is. And that's the thing. It is a calling. I mean, I knew at 5 years old what I was going to be.
Yeah.
So,
next up, you talk about car stops and building searches, and I remember that class pretty well too. I mean, that really puts your You know, it's not a classroom thing. You're actually going out and you're going through and conducting it exactly as you would as an officer to see what it's like from the officer's perspective.
Yes. Yeah, we bring a car out. We bring a car out that, you know, a citizen. We do a mock car stop and explain why we do certain things in certain ways. You know, when we walk, come up and talk to the people, why we ask them to put their maybe hands on the steering wheel, and why we go step by step and explain why we do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, to make people understand, you know, there's a safety reasons why we do certain things.
For the officer and for the person
for
in
both,
the car.
Yes, for both.
Because again, our president, who's never run a hot dog stand, he knows what a car stop's all about. And he said in the State of the Union address, no less, that he never had to have the talk with his kids because his kids were white, that it's black kids and brown kids, and they have to have a talk. The parents have to tell them, do this or you're going to get killed. And I sat there listening to it, and I thought, I had that talk with my kids. Yeah. Did you have that talk with your kids?
Yes.
How to act at a traffic stop?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then I think, and I watched your podcast on that, and I told him never use your name. My dad.
That's exactly what I told him.
Never use my name, you know. So, and I had a couple nieces that have used my name in the past. But
I will tell you, though, I think the statute of limitations is way gone on it. But when I was a kid, my stepfather got me and my brother out of all kinds of jams.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so we weren't shy about using his name.
Sure.
Yeah. But I told him, don't use my name.
Yeah.
All right. So, and obviously the car stop thing, Officer Vasquez, North Kansas City, that falls into that as well, because all he did was pull somebody over with an expired tag and he lost his life as a result of that.
And the one thing I want to talk about too, we do a youth academy in the spring, and we teach the youth why we do certain things and what to do if you're stopped by a police officer.
So let's talk about that for a second. Let's say that I am stopped by a police officer. It's happened more times than I can count, probably. Not lately. I think as I'm getting older, I'm learning what the rules are and not to do that. I did, you know, Bob Watson's one of our sponsors on the podcast, State Farm agent. You know Bob?
I know, yes.
Great guy. And I went through a period of time where I got enough tickets that I got the letter from the state of Missouri that said, if you get one more, you're going to be walking. Right. And Bob Watson didn't know me very well then, but he was my State Farm agent. He called me into the office and he gave me the talk.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, you know, State Farm doesn't care all that much when you total a car, which I had, and my wife totaled a car. But what they care about is all these tickets. Tick, 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 tick. That's going to make your rates go up. So stop it. Just knock it off. He didn't even know who I was at the time. And he's like lecturing me like my dad.
That's funny.
Yeah. And so I did get that turned around.
Well, good.
So let's say that I have a slip and I get pulled over down here in Westport. It's 2:30 in the morning because that's when I come into work. So what should I do?
Well, I mean, so you would be stopped by an officer. You know, roll your window down to the point where they can talk to you.
Don't get out of the car.
Don't get to stay in the car. If you know, and that's what the CCW and how the state laws changed to let us know that if you have a CCW, if you did have one. And that, you know, every officer kind of handles that a little different. But way I
look. So if I have a gun, I should say, I have a gun.
You have a gun.
Okay.
And then some officers will, you know, have you just, you know, hey, okay, thanks for telling me. Keep your hands on the dash or keep your hands on the whatever to keep where I can see your hands. And that, and then if that's, you know, if everything's going well, then the gun can just stay where it's at.
Yeah.
It's when things, you know, when they start grabbing for the gun or something like that, then things change.
Yeah.
And then just, you know, give your information. If you don't feel comfortable with something, ask for a supervisor. That's fine. And if a supervisor comes and talks and lets you know what's going on, and the officer should explain why you've been pulled over, and then, you know, they choose to write a ticket or not to write a ticket.
Right. So, you know, my registration's in the glove compartment, so I'm going to have to reach into the glove compartment and get it. Do I have that conversation? I'm going to reach into the glove compartment now.
Let's say if the officer asks for it, say where things are. Be very specific. Hey, that this is where
driver's license in my wallet. I got to reach back here to get that.
Yes.
Yeah. A lot of things that are common sense things that you can walk away from it. As you know, as we say on the podcast, if you'll comply, you won't die.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. It's just working together. That's the thing.
Nobody's going to die. If compliance happens and you do your job and I comply because maybe I've broken the law here.
Sure.
You know?
Yes, if everyone complies, and you know, and the thing, if you have a question, I ask the officer, but do it in a way that's, you know, professional, or you know, because they're going to let you know what's going on.
What about the old wives' tale that people like Joe Biden like to spin over and over and again is you've got pulled over because you're black?
Yeah.
Tell me that doesn't happen.
It doesn't. I've never done that. It doesn't happen. I've never seen that happen.
Yeah.
I've never, in the 25 years I've done this, I've never seen it happen.
I believe you. So. All right, we go to the next thing, domestic violence, and that's going to Hope House and the STAT team, too. That's two very different things. Yes. Let's talk about domestic violence first.
So domestic violence, you know, that we have a lot of that in our city and that, throughout the nation. It's not just our city, but that's a,
you know, worst call that a police officer can get. At least that's what my stepfather used to tell me.
Because you're coming into a family that's very upset.
Right.
And everyone's upset. And, you know, a lot of times you're taking, maybe you're taking away the father or the mom. I mean, it just depends on the situation. The family's upset, and it could create a problem, just the fact of you doing what you're supposed to do, your job of taking, the suspect out.
Yeah.
And that could cause another fight. So what we do is we bring in Hope Randa from Hope House, and they do an excellent presentation on what it's about,
Options are for women.
Options, yes. And, you know, one of the things that I always, it's like, why don't they just leave? If you're a victim of domestic violence, why wouldn't you just leave?
I've never understood that either.
And I don't. But through this class, I understand why now, because a lot of them, the suspect's been treating them, they may not have a job, they may not have resources to get out of the house.
So they're dependent.
They become dependent on that person. They may be from another city or even another country, and they don't have anyone to go to. Fortunately, I have a big family. I can go to a big family, but some of those, they don't have that. And so that's what I learned in this class.
Yeah.
Through domestic violence.
I've never understood that. It's not in my DNA. I doubt it's in yours to ever raise your hand to a woman.
Yeah, never.
I just don't understand that. But obviously it does happen, and that's where you get these calls. My stepfather told me a story once where they got called to a domestic deal, and the husband was wailing away on the wife. And when the officers intervened and grabbed the husband, the wife started hitting the officers.
Yes. Have you
seen that before?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So STAT, that's a new acronym, fairly new. I mean, it's been around for a long time, but that's what the old SWAT was.
SWAT, yeah. It's.
Do you remember why they changed it?
I think it just became more of a, the way I understand it was they thought that was too mean of a word.
Weapon? The W in SWAT stood for weapon.
I guess mean is probably not the best word to use, but that's what it seems like. That's why we change things around.
Yeah.
But
so tell me how the STAT team is used primarily in Blue Springs.
So primarily they help out with any kind of search warrants. They'll actually go in and actually execute the search warrant. Their team goes in, they have 12 to 14 guys, depending on what they have that day. Come in with our armored cars, and then we'll execute the search warrant on houses. A barricaded subject, they'll help out with that. They may help out other cities. If there's cities, something's happened in a city where they need a break, they'll go to other, like say Independence or Kansas City, and help them out with what they've got going on. There's been, but they do a lot more search warrants than I think they do most anything else.
Yeah, but if somebody's barricaded in a house and they've got a weapon, I mean, the STAT team is going to get that call.
Yes.
And they've got a lot more tools.
Yes.
At their disposal.
They've got more armor that they wear. Yeah. They've got more of the high-powered guns.
And again, the objective is not to take somebody out. The objective is to do your job and go home to your family.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, again, I've been through this a couple of times, so I know. Yeah. So I'm going to skip the next one because we want to end with that. Firearms training, firearms safety. And what's interesting to me is, when I hear the president or the left folks say, we've got to get rid of the guns. The guns are the issue. And then we come at it from, my God, if you would just enforce the laws that are already on the books, and if somebody – and I know – I don't know where you are on this, but where I am on it is – if you commit a crime with a gun, you should go away for a long time. I don't know what the number is. Let's figure it out. But letting them plead it down and then they're right back out on the street again, that's what happened at Michigan State. The guy was arrested on a gun charge in 2019. He pled it down to a misdemeanor. He was out, and he got another gun, and he went in and killed a bunch of people. That's exactly. That's that turnstile thing that happens. So enforce it. So if you commit a crime with a gun, you go away for a long time. And then my belief is if you murder somebody with a gun, not self-defense, but if you murder somebody and that's how it's adjudicated, you go away for life.
Sure.
In a box, somewhere and you never come out. I think in one generation we'd fix a lot of this.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right on that. I mean, I think that it's important to have people have guns, their own guns for safe, their own safety. And that's one of the things we do in this class is people that have the guns, teach them more safety, you know, how to keep it, how to hold it, you know, how to. Because I think a lot of people just get a gun, you know, becomes popular, they get a gun and then don't know how to really use it a lot.
Yeah, and end up getting killed with their own gun, which could happen, which is why this is great that you teach this to people because, you know, Kurt and I have the belief that probably 99% of the gun owners, the legal gun owners out there, are good people and aren't going to break the law.
Sure.
You know, so what we hear a lot of times is that cops want all the guns off the road, get all the guns. And that flies in the face of you basically taking class loads of people to the range, teaching them how to fire it correctly and getting them their CCW.
Sure. And, you know, going back, talk about CCW. When I started, CCW wasn't involved and wasn't the law yet. So, I mean, the person had a gun in their car, we could charge them with a crime.
Yeah.
And now that law's changed a lot, so.
Don't we have constitutional carry in Missouri?
When it changed, the law changed a couple years ago, that's what it changed.
So you don't even need that anymore?
As long as you're in Missouri, you don't need to have the CCW permits.
Yeah. But your training gets them along the line with that and teaches them how to use it correctly. And probably it's a very good program.
Yes. And that's one of the things, like I said, when I started with CCW, wasn't a law yet. Became a law, and I wasn't sure about it. But like you said, you know, 90% of the people or more that have guns aren't a problem. You stop someone, hey, I got my CCW. Hey, thanks for letting me know.
And then you communication is the key.
Yeah, communication, absolutely.
Yeah. So, Not getting pulled over and taking attitude. And it's like, because if you got attitude, it's going to lead to a bad interaction, I would think.
Sure. It does. So.
I mean, I got to tell you, when I've gotten pulled over at 3 o'clock in the morning on my way to work, I've not been in a very good mood. It's like, I got to get to work and I got things I got to do. But you put all that aside and let this officer do his job.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of that, the ride along, I got to go with Shannon. Help me on the last
Humphrey?
Name. Humphrey. That's right. Yeah. That's who I went on the ride along with. We did an overnight ride along. Yeah. And you know, I'd been in a police car before because at one point we had a take-home car in Indiana. That was a program they had for that police department was they wanted to get more cops on the street, so they let officers take the cars home.
Sure.
And the deal was you had to make so many runs per month to keep the car.
Okay.
Right? So I was in a car that got called into different things, but quite a different deal riding along with one of our officers in Blue Springs because that night there was a drug sting at an apartment complex.
Oh, wow.
It got real. That's not the classroom, and that's not phonying anything up.
Yes.
That was definitely real, and I stayed in the car.
Oh, yeah.
So talk about what happens with the ride along with the class.
So what we do 10-hour shifts, so what we ask them is come in about 15 minutes early.
I did an overnight, man. That was there was a lot of stuff going on.
Oh, I'm sure you're pretty busy because we do the 9 p.m. to 7 a.m. is our midnights. So they come in, go to the briefing, and kind of see what our briefing's like.
Yeah.
Every briefing's different. It's kind of unique. Sometimes you got to cover your ears on what officers are talking about. But they come in, and then they get the ride. So, like, I actually, the first class that I was a part of, Jeannie Lauer rode with me. So that was pretty cool that she got to ride, and we got to do a couple different things.
Jeannie was a state representative. Well, actually, she was city council member of Blue Springs, and then a state rep, and now she's on the Jackson County Legislature.
Yes, at the time she was city council.
Yeah.
So it was pretty funny because we got to do a couple different things. Went to Aldi's. A lady was passed out, helped her out, and just made a couple warrant arrests, and it was a good time. But that's what we try to do. You know, every officer's a little different. I always try to get them, unless it's really unsafe, get them out of the car and see what we're doing.
I got out of the car on a couple of things, on a couple of minor runs that we went on. But when that drug sting went down at that apartment complex, I was in the car. I was like Marlon Perkins in the canoe, man. You get that reference. Kurt will never get that reference because that's a Wild Kingdom reference, Kurt. Yeah. Yeah, just nod, smile, whatever. Okay, so we've gotten all that done now, and that takes us to the FATS training. FATS is another acronym. I don't know what it stands for.
Firearm Training System.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
It's a Milo machine, yeah.
So, and as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, when I did it, it was an epic fail.
Yes.
But talk about, and then we'll show some scenarios, but talk about you do it in teams, right?
Yes, we have two people come up, yes.
So talk about what you tell this team of two people, what they're going to have to face.
So what we do is we have them come up in teams of two, then we have someone be the primary officer, which the primary officer is the one that handles the call. Secondary is kind of the backup. So the program can't, like, it doesn't understand you're talking, but we try to get them to say, hey, you know, what would you say in this scenario? How would you talk to this person? Whatever the scenario it is. And then we run the scenario through, and we'll show you a couple. And then you can change the scenarios around to where shoot, don't shoot. They can bring a knife, gun, whatever the case may be.
So. Yeah, I don't know if you got the scenario that I went through, but at the end of this, I'll describe what I went through. And I think, you know, I should get a pass on this because of what I saw. But, Kurt, which one we're going to fire up first?
We got hotel suspect, hidden shooter, axeman, bank escape, bar brawl, domestic assault, office bomber.
Let's do the axeman first.
Axeman.
Axeman, yes.
All right. By the way, you don't have one called stuffed animal, do you?
I don't remember that one.
I remember it well. All right. So is there sound with this, or are you going to walk us through it?
Am I going to walk?
Okay. Can you see that?
Yes, yes. So it should be shield talking.
Oh, I'm glad you're here. We have the alarm at this house. I've been here before. So if you want to take the left side of the house, I can take the right side and I can meet you in the back.
So honestly, normally we don't separate for the scenarios.
Okay, sure.
So what's it look like he has in his hand? Can you tell what he has in his hand?
I can't tell what he has.
Looks like a gun.
Yeah, it does look like a gun.
Oh, it's an axe.
Axeman.
He kind of, well, that was the title, I guess.
So, yeah, give it a minute. Yeah. But when you first see it, it looks like a gun.
Yeah, it does. The shadow. Okay, I see now that it's an axe.
Yeah.
And where's he going?
He's coming at you.
Okay, so he's coming at me. I'm the officer now.
But look behind him. You're the other officer.
Yeah. And he's running towards us. So that's the scenario.
That's the scenario.
So, okay, what should I, as the officer that he's running toward, be doing?
So one of the things about it, you know, if you see this guy, you'd be letting your partner know, hey, there's someone around the corner. That if you first thought they had a gun, you'd be saying gun, gun, and then you find out that it's a hatchet or an axe. But the problem with it is you have behind you. If you were to take a shot at the guy, there's a your officer's behind you. So you need to, like we talk about, know your target and beyond.
Yeah.
So if you were to miss that guy, you may hit your partner. So you'd have to kind of be at an angle to where your background would not be your officer.
Would that be the way it would happen on a call? The other officer would be behind the person? Would they come around like that?
Not always, but if there was separation in some way, or if something occurred where we got separated,
yeah,
that could happen.
What's going on there? It's like the guy falls down and the officer falls down.
Because what they're saying is the officer shot and hit the other officer.
Oh, instead of hitting the suspect.
Yeah, instead of hitting the suspect.
I got you.
So now he's moving
to a different angle.
Okay, I see that now. All right, so now you don't have the officer in the background. You still got the guy with the axe. And you're probably telling him, you know, put it down.
Put it down, put it down, put it down.
Okay. I'm going to give up.
Put it down.
I'll give up.
So he's going to put it down. He puts his hands up. That's a good boy.
Yes.
You tell we have a puppy in the house? That's a good boy.
But the thing about any kind of sharp object or a knife, there's a thing called a 21-foot rule.
Yeah.
Basically, with the 21-foot rule, they could, by the time I pulled my gun out of my holster and fire, they could reach you with that knife.
So, you should already have the gun out.
You should keep them with the 21 way further than 21 feet. But the thing is, it's not like they're, you know, they're saying, well, why'd you shoot him with the knife? Well, if he had a knife.
Yeah.
Well, he had a knife and I was within 21 feet. I can't pull my gun and get it out and fire without him hitting me with that knife, stabbing me with that knife.
And, I mean, how realistic is what the president is saying that you, like this guy, if you feel threatened, you should just shoot him in the leg?
Well, the thing is, especially if they're on any kind of drugs or something, shooting them in the legs, not going to.
Yeah.
There was a case in Kansas City, I think they ended up having to shoot the guy like 16 times.
And that's just another thing that you deal with that these politicians don't understand.
Well, no, and he was high. The guy was high on PCP.
Yeah.
And they were firing in, you know, and he's, you know, probably he was legally dead. He just kept on going.
Wow. Crazy. So, what do you want to show next?
We got bank escape, bar brawl, dry clean, church shooting, school shooter search. Let's do
bank escape.
Okay.
Kurt was hoping you would say drag queen. But.
What? I
don't. Okay, so what do we got here?
So basically, you're going to a call at a bank, an alarm at a bank, and the officer showed up. He parked a little too close.
Okay.
And so he's like, it's one of those things on the, probably the hair on the back of his neck's like, oh, I got a little too close. I need to get out of this area.
Yeah.
So that's why he backed up. And then officers, here he comes out.
That's the bad guy. That's he's got a machine gun.
Yeah.
Doesn't he know that's illegal? Well, you know.
And so here's the second one. And you talked about getting shooting him in the leg. That as fast as that came out.
Oh, yeah. It's bang, bang.
Bang, bang. Yeah. And then both of those guys had armor on.
Yeah. So and an officer, just a standard issue officer, I'm talking about the stat team here. Yeah. I mean, they don't have an automatic weapon, do they?
Not, we do have some in our not automatic, but we have AR-15s in our car.
Yeah. Okay, well, AR-15 is semi-automatic, right? Yeah. You know, that's another interchangeable word. Kurt and I talk about this all the time. He tries to educate me because I'm not really a gun guy. But, you know, AR is not assault rifle, number one. It's a brand name. I've learned that.
AR doesn't stand for assault rifle.
Semi-automatic basically means that you pull the trigger, it goes bang. You pull the trigger, it goes bang. That's fully automatic, what you're seeing on the screen there.
Some nice special effects, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the things, like the L.A. shooting, if you remember the L.A. shooting with the guys who were robbing the banks, they were covered head to toe with armor.
Yeah.
So the only way the officer was able to get him, he actually had to shoot him in the ankles.
Wow. Shocking, Doug, that criminals would break the law.
Yeah.
It really is. Okay. So what else we got here?
That's a good one. We got...
There's one that...
Let's show one more.
Let's see.
School shooting group. Bomber, hidden shooter, hotel suspect, line of duty burglary, church shooting, school shooter search.
Is there one you would want to?
Dealer's choice.
Let's go to the school shooting.
Okay. School shooting group or school shooter search?
The search.
Okay.
Okay. So we're in a school.
We got called to a shooting in progress at a school.
Gunfire going off.
Okay, so you go toward the gunfire.
Yes. And that's what's changed since Columbine is how we kind of handle school shootings.
Yeah. So you got somebody down there.
He went down the right side, the right hallway. He's a shooter with a gun, a rifle. The right one, down there, that one.
He's telling you where to go.
Hurry. The right side, down the right hall.
He says, down the right hall.
To the right. To the right.
To the right. To the right.
To your right. He's got a rifle.
Okay, so we're going to the right. What just happened there?
Somebody got shot.
Oh, there's the shooter. And when they're shooting at you, Doug, you got the all clear to take them down, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And that's like I talked about with school, Columbine kind of changed things, but we'll get two or three officers together and we'll go into the school.
What about Uvalde, Texas, where they just kind of waited outside while stuff was going down?
I'm not sure what all happened there. I hate to.
You don't want to speculate. Yet. I get that.
But I know one of the things that's different is that, you know, Columbine, they waited too. Because our training was you waited until the stat team came and you let the stat team kind of handle it.
Yeah.
But now it's to where you get two or three together and you go in together regardless. So.
Yeah. Similar thing happened to my son in Indiana at a Walmart. I don't know if you heard about that recently in Evansville, the Walmart shooting there. That was a friend of my son's.
Wow.
And he was working a one-off shift that night and had just clocked out. And they had an alarm going off about an active shooter. He thought it was a drill. And he's like, well, I worked my shift. I'm going home. And he walked by the guy who was the shooter.
Oh, wow.
And they were friends, right? And he's like, I thought you got fired. Okay, cool. And then the guy went down another thing and just started shooting again. And he started, you know, you see it on the, I don't know, did you see the body cam images from the police?
I think I saw a little bit of it, yes.
Yeah, where they went into, much like this school video that we're showing here, they went into the Walmart. There were customers in there. They had to go row by row. Yes. And then when they finally got to the guy, he wanted to die. And you see that sometimes with police work, suicide by cop.
Absolutely.
We had one in Blue Springs, I remember, when I was on city council, where he had written a suicide note and he went at the officers with a knife.
Yes.
And they took him down.
Yeah, it came out as a burglary.
Yeah.
And he's described the burglary suspect as himself.
Yeah. It's so rare that you remember it. I mean, that was years ago. But so this is what you put people through. And by and large, how do they do? Because this is like one of the last things you do in the class. They've learned a lot about police work. How do they do by and large?
Most of them still fail. But I mean, I say that.
So I feel you're saying that to make me feel better.
Yeah, I'm making you feel better. But no, it's more of just, even at officers, we go through this, we don't always do the best.
Yeah.
So I'm just, when I say that, I'm just kidding. But I, you know, I think it's just an eye opener of how quick things happen.
It really is. And, you know, my scenario was, it was a crazy person in a parking lot, okay? Just doing, wearing a long overcoat, doing all kinds of weird, you know, movements and herky jerky and all that. And I'm talking to the person, trying to get them to, you know, calm down, look at me, and all the language that I was taught to tell them.
Sure.
And when this person finally does, they stop and they look at me just like you're looking at me now. Reach into the overcoat, okay, and pull, and the hand gets to about there, and I plugged them right here, and they pulled out a stuffed animal.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. That's...
And that's when Stacey Edwards said, Councilman, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
I was thinking I was going to die.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So, I mean, in that scenario, how far do you let that hand come out?
Yeah, I mean, just that's the thing. Keep your eyes on their hands and what they got going, and you know, try to look for that as best as you can. Keep your eyes straight forward, and hopefully that, you know,
don't have an itchy finger.
Don't have an itchy finger, no. Absolutely.
Well, I have all the respect in the world for you and police officers and what you go through, and I just wish you safety.
Thank you.
Out there and for your brethren out there at all the different agencies, Blue Springs and beyond, and certainly Kansas City and the things that you deal with. Just know that we at Dale Carter's America, we've got your back.
Thank you so much.
And, you know, hopefully other people will come along. I think by and large the citizens do.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Our citizens in Blue Springs have really backed us through the years. I remember when the Dallas shooting, remember when the four officers were shot? That weekend, I think that night, I think they delivered like 8 pizzas for us. Just different people, not every one person, but just throughout the whole community. This the letters. You know, I probably shouldn't say this, but like I went drove through Plowboys, and the guy in front of me paid for my food.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing. Like, this, you know, what was for my whole family. He didn't know it was for my whole family. So I thanked him. You know, and it was just a genuine thank you so much for doing that. So. Yeah.
Well, I always say it on the air on KFKF. I say it on the podcast as well. But thank you for what you do to keep us safe and free here on the home front.
Thank you so much.
Doug Heisman, officer with the Blue Springs Police Department and the Blue Springs Citizens Police Academy. Look into it. If you don't live in Blue Springs like I do, look into it with your town. And if they don't have one, ask them to start one. Because there was a time when we didn't have this in Blue Springs. I know Mayor Ross was a proponent of getting it going.
Yes.
And I think it's made a big difference.
Oh, absolutely. I think so. Yeah, 2008 is when we started. So
yeah.
I think we're still going strong. I think some other agencies have maybe stopped. But we're still going strong. We're thankful for the citizens.
Well, it's great to see you again.
Nice to see you.
Thanks for coming to see us.
Yeah.
And this is Dale Carter's America.
The views expressed on Dale Carter's America are Dale's and Kurt Wheeler's. They do not necessarily reflect the views of KFKF or Steel City Media. Comments can be sent to DaleCartersAmerica@gmail.com. Check back for weekly episodes. Subscribe, spread the word, and give us a 5-star review. Thanks for being a part of Dale Carter's America.